Hello, everybody. Welcome to College Hoops Chat. I'm your host, Jim Maceno. This is your weekly college basketball radio show here on WVOX, 1460 AM in New Rochelle, New York. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for being part of our show. Hope everybody's been enjoying all the games for the first 2 weeks of the season. I certainly have been pretty much watching basketball every single night. I think that what's most interesting is that a lot of good games in the first 2 weeks. You know, there's been a lot of the big time teams playing what we call cream puff schedules, meaning really easy games that they can't lose. And some of them actually lost. But there's a lot of teams that have played some big games. For instance, Gonzaga. I mean, Gonzaga literally is playing tough games to start their season. It's been really impressive to watch Gonzaga's schedule. You know, they lost a really tough game, Gonzaga, last week to Texas, who's now number one on KenPom. I don't know if you noticed that. That's kind of a shocker. I don't think anybody saw that coming into the season. All right, so before we get into more about all the games, I want to talk about the games. I'm enjoying watching the games. It's been really fun. Let me tell you who's on the show tonight. In about 5 minutes, we have Coach Bob Walsh. Now, Bob called the show last year as a coach at Providence. Ironically, he's now a coach at Iona College, and I coached Bob in Little League. So perfect person for the show. Great coach, really good guy. He's calling at 8:15. 8:30, we're going to have Kenny from Rye. And then our last segment at about 8:48, we're going to have Steve Hegel, guy I know from Twitter who is a college basketball writer. I think he'll be a really good addition to the show. All right. With that said, let me go through a couple of things that caught my eye. Besides that, some big games were played. Friday was unbelievable. I don't know if you saw, there were so many good games on Friday, including the Iona College Gales. We're going to talk all about that with Coach Bob Walsh. I'll just point out that Iona won big on Friday. They beat Vermont up at Mohican Sun on a neutral court. They led the entire game. A very impressive performance by the Iona College Gales. So they're now 2-1. They lost a heartbreaker against Hofstra, but they beat two good teams in Vermont and Penn. So Iona's off to a nice start, and we'll talk all about the Gales with Coach Bob Walsh. Saw an interesting thing on Saturday. Syracuse beat Northeastern 76-48, kind of a blowout. Northeastern's not that good of a team. Some people ran stories that this was Jim Boeheim's 1,000th win. And that's kind of a joke because he's won 1,101 games, but because of some rule violations in this very long career of Jim Boeheim, they took away some games from Syracuse that they won. I just think that's so ridiculous. I don't think taking away wins does anything in a disciplinary way because it happens to prior teams. You can't rewrite history. These games happen. There were two teams on the court they played. It's just an unfortunate fact that that team later had some disciplinary issues, but you can't rewrite history. Look, I'm fine with sanction for bad actions when they're proven. If some college basketball, college football team breaks the rules, they should be penalized, but taking away wins doesn't do anything, and it rewrites history. So it's not even a real sanction. So it's kind of fake in my mind. But anyway, so to me, Jim Boeheim's won 1,101 games. Syracuse off to a weird start. They're 2-1. They beat Lehigh and Northeastern, neither a highly ranked team. They played one good team, which was Colgate, and they lost. So I don't know yet what we get from Syracuse Orange this year. They're a New York team. I wish them well. We'll follow them in the season. We'll get some people to call in about Syracuse. But right now, I don't know what we have with that Syracuse team. A team I love is UNC. They're 4-0. Armando Bacot yesterday in a game against James Madison was good. They're ranked 80 in KenPom. A good game. UNC won 80-64. Solid win. Armando Bacot, their center, had 19 points and 23 rebounds. Talk about an unbelievable game. He's a really terrific player. And Westchester's own R.J. Davis had 21 points and 5 assists. So North Carolina has been kind of quiet so far because they haven't won any big games against big teams. But they beat everybody on their schedule. They beat UNC Wilmington. They beat Charleston, Gardner-Webb, and James Madison. Some people thought some of the games were closer than they should be, but who cares? They're 4-0. They're playing well. They're getting better. UNC is one of the best teams in the country. We'll keep an eye on them. Friday night, I saw a team play that really shocked me. I turned on Illinois versus UCLA. They were playing in Vegas. And all I could say about Illinois is wow, because I expected UCLA to win the game. When I turned it on, I was expecting to watch the Bruins have a really good game because Illinois lost 10 players from last year. Now, remember, there's only 13 scholarship players on a team. Illinois lost 10 of them. So most of the players on a team are freshmen and transfers. Few older guys, but not a lot. Illinois played unbelievable. They beat UCLA 79-70 on Friday night, but it was the way they beat them. Terrence Shannon, one of the transfers, played like a lottery pick. Looked like Michael Jordan out there. He was unbelievable. They played elite defense for the entire game, Illinois. Deion Danja was huge down low for them. A guy who went to Baylor, was a big recruit, didn't do well, only barely played, and now he is got lost weight. He's in great shape, and he's playing for Illinois. Very interesting. Brad Underwood's a great coach, and he had freshmen playing a huge part of the game, and he goes out and beats UCLA on a neutral court. That was really impressive. Keep an eye on Illinois. I was really impressed with Illinois on Friday night. A terrific performance when they beat UCLA. And we have our guest. All right, so let me go to the phone line because we have a great game to talk about Friday night besides Illinois-UCLA. That's with the Iona College Gales. Excuse me, Iona University Gales. Do I have on the line Coach Bob Walsh?
You do, Coach Mazzano. How are you?
That's right. You can call, you're like the one person that I still talk to in life that can call me Coach. It's awesome.
Absolutely. You've always been Coach to me.
That's so awesome. Now you already made my night, Bob. So right off the bat, you made my night. So let me remind everybody, Bob coached at Providence last year, and we were so happy to kind of connect with him because I coached Bob in the Little League. Not only did I coach Bob in Little League, but Bob, we should point out, it was the league champion for the minors championship team, and you were the shortstop.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was maybe my first championship of my life, actually.
It's so funny that you remember that, you know, because, you know, this is a side quickly, because you're a coach and you get coaching. I coached a travel soccer team of 13-year-old boys in New Rochelle, and we didn't do well in the first year I coached, but the second year I took over, we won the Westchester County Championship in soccer. And I said to them at halftime in a close game, I know I sound silly saying this to you because you're only 13 years old, but if you win today the Westchester County Travel Soccer 13-year championship, you'll remember this your whole life. You really will. And it's true, right, Bob?
It's totally true, 100%. I mean, those are memories, and I still literally have close friends that live around this area that I stay connected to, who are Little League friends of mine. You know, they're like, how do you know him? I'm like, oh, we played Little League together. You know, we were on that team together, or we played the All-Stars together. So lifelong memories for sure.
Right. So I go on Twitter one night, Bob, and I know you since you were a kid. I knew your brother John and your mom and dad and great family. And I see Bob Walsh coming to Iona College. You were up at Providence with the great Ed Cooley in one of the, like, really great modern biggie seasons. You had a tremendous season at Providence. All of a sudden, you're with Rick Pitino coaching the Iona University Gales. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I'm pretty fortunate to spend 3 years with Ed at Providence and work under somebody who's done such a terrific job building the program there. And then actually, Coach Pitino's son was a student manager for us when I was on Tim Welsh's staff at Providence in the late 90s, early 2000s. So he was a student at Providence. He wanted to get into coaching. Obviously, you know, he's had a great career coaching. He's now at New Mexico. And he had contacted me and said, you know, his dad might have a change in his staff, and you know, there was a health issue, and you know, might be looking for a veteran assistant coach. Would you be interested? And I said, sure. You know, I mean, anytime a Hall of Fame coach is interested in talking to you about, you know, coaching on a staff, pretty fortunate. But it all happened very fast and very late. It wasn't until the end of September when Coach called me and, you know, the change was official, and it was a Thursday morning, I got a phone call from Coach Pitino, and by Sunday night, I had accepted the job, and by Tuesday, I was in New Rochelle. So
wow.
It all happened really fast, but it's exciting.
Now, you have a background in Iona College. You were a coach already at Iona College, right? You have quite a background.
Yeah, so I grew up about a mile and a half from the campus. Both my parents are Iona alums, so I literally grew up on the campus. I went to Pat Kennedy's basketball camp in the summer. I went
awesome.
To day camp on that campus, and I was a graduate assistant for when Richie Pett was the athletic director, Rich Petriccioni, and Tim sure. Welsh took over for his dad. I was a graduate assistant working for the SID and helping out with the basketball program, and that's how I got started. So I have my master's from Iona, and it's always been home for me, so it's pretty cool.
That's great. So, I mean, look at these coaches that you work with. And not only, first of all, you were a coach up at Maine and a school, I believe, in Rhode Island also, right? That was like a junior college?
Division III school, Rhode Island College, right in Providence.
Which was like a champion team. You won a lot there.
Yeah, we had a really good run. We went to eight straight NCAA tournaments in 9 years there, and we won the league six different times and had a lot of success. Coached some great, tough kids. So we had a Division III powerhouse going there.
So I'm not just saying this because you're on the show. If I had to rank coaches I would want to play for, if I was a college basketball player, and I was so far from that when I played, I couldn't even make down a prep team, but I love college basketball. And if I was a player right now, I would love to play for either Rick Pitino or Ed Cooley. I mean, you coach with two of my favorite coaches.
Yeah, I'm very lucky, like I said. And honestly, two really different personalities, two guys who are 100% true to themselves. You know, Ed has such a special... Ed invests so much time in relationships, more than anybody I've ever seen. And he's got such a special way of connecting. And he knows what he doesn't know. He's not a guy who walks around and acts like he's the smartest guy in the room or knows everything there is to know about coaching. But he gets the most out of his kids due to the relationship that he's established. And, he's a ton of personality, and Coach Pitino, obviously, when it comes to basketball, he's all business. But the first thing that I noticed just joining the program here was the environment around the program is really loose and really fun and upbeat. You know, it's not like it's this some dark, like, commitment to success where, you know, nobody has any fun or laughs. Like, everybody's busting each other's chops, and so it's a really good environment. And he just has such a relentless pursuit of improvement. The amount of time that he wants to be in the gym making players better is just incredible. So I'm very, very lucky. It is two guys you would love to play for, certainly love to coach for, and really interesting to me because they just have different personalities and different styles. And I've been fortunate enough, to literally go from working for one on a Monday to working for another one on a Wednesday.
Right. So let's go to your last point because I think it's important. We had somebody on the show one time, a retired coach. I forgot who it was now, top of my head. But they said that Rick Pitino's style of player development is pretty much the model for college basketball these days. That, like, Rick was way ahead of the game on player development. You kind of just touched on that a little bit about improving all your skills. Maybe some coaches aren't as dedicated to skill development as Rick Pitino is. Can you touch on that?
100%. That's accurate. And if you look at some of the coaches that have worked for him, you know, Kevin Willard, for example, at Seton Hall, he was doing a terrific job of player development at Seton Hall and getting kids that were maybe middle-of-the-road Big East guys and turning them into, elite players. And, Coach, like I said, he's relentless about improvement and being in the gym. So, we do individual development with our players throughout the year, and there's like a 40-minute individual development session with our players 3 or 4 days a week during the season. So all that individual stuff is done, in the morning before class. And then when we get to practice, we're not shooting free throws. We're not doing, working on jump shots, stuff like that. When we get to practice, we're playing. We're practicing. We're working on the game plan. We're working on our press. We're working on our so it is unique, I think, and it's been documented obviously over 40 years. Coach has been coaching how much better his players get and how good they are as professionals. I think because of the commitment to individual skill development and coach, this isn't one of those, hey Bob, why don't you go work out the point guard? Like, coach is in there every day. For every one of them, saying, right. Okay, guys, get a ball. Here's what we're doing today. So, and the whole staff is in there. And it's, you know, it's intentional skill work, and, you know, the proof is in the pudding. There's no question the players improved throughout the year and throughout their careers.
No question. All right, so let's get into the season. So the first question that, like, seven people texted me when they heard you on the show, so let's get right to the thing that Iona fans really, really want to know, is how's Quinn Slezinski, how's this ankle, how long will he be out?
He's, first of all, Quinn is awesome. You know, he's such a great kid, and he's so dedicated. Hopefully he's not going to be out too long. You know, he turned his ankle the day before we played at Vermont, and it was kind of a freak thing. He just stepped on somebody's foot in like a, you know, it wasn't even like a full-speed drill. So hopefully he'll be back soon. I don't know, quite honestly, you know, what the timeline will be. You know, we don't think it's going to be too long. Hopefully he can get back out on the court this week doing some individual work and gaining strength. I know he said he felt a lot better today, and you know, he'll be back out there in the maroon and gold very soon, I hope.
Okay, you know, so the one thing I noticed about Quinn, so, you know, the one fun thing for me with this radio show is I get invited to the press conferences for the Iona Gales, and first of all, interviewing Rick is really, really cool, only because, not only because he's a Hall of Fame guy, but he's very nice to us. Like, you know, here we are, this local Westchester bloggers and local newspapers, and he treats us with a lot of respect, which I'm very thankful for, because he's, you know, I don't think every coach would be as nice as Rick is to we are, and we really do appreciate it. But one thing I noticed when Quinn Slezinski came in after the Penn game was a level of maturity from the prior year. He seems like he'd be becoming more of a man.
I would say that's accurate. Now, I obviously just have gotten to know Quinn this year and have gotten to know him really well, you know, and talked to him a lot. And he's talked about some things in his past where maybe he wasn't as committed, you know, to basketball as he feels like he should have been. And look, there's a little, you know, there's a little senioritis that happens with a lot of kids in college that, you know, it's like, okay, hey, this is, you know, this is going to be my last year. And you know, I think Quinn's realizes he has a chance to play professionally and make some money. You know, he is as committed and cares as much as anyone, you know, that I've coached in a long time. You know, I mean, he is fully dedicated to being the best basketball player he can be for our team. He's a great teammate, and he wants to be a pro. You know, he wants to get paid to play basketball, and he has the ability to do that. So,
good.
I do think there's a maturity level there that serves him well and will certainly serve our team well this year.
I agree. Well, hopefully he can play against Santa Clara. That's your next game on Sunday, playing in Vegas. Let's hope he can be on the court, but we're not sure yet. All right, let's talk. So you got played three games. You're 2-1. In my view, as somebody who watches every minute of every game, really strong performances against Penn and Vermont. Not your best performance against Hofstra. I thought Hofstra played very well. Sometimes you do get beat by a team that played better on that day. They were tremendous shooting from the three. Your defense wasn't tremendous on the three. But Friday against Vermont, you guys are happy, right?
Yeah, we had a really good win. And I think, you know, those three games, you know, in two of the three, we were ready to defend. And our defense really dictated the game against two very, very good offensive teams in Penn and Vermont, and we won both games going away. Against Hofstra, I don't think we were mentally ready to play, and I don't know. I've talked to the guys about it. Like, was there a difference? Like, did we, you know, did we think we were just going to, you know, they had beaten Hofstra the year before. Hofstra lost some good players, so maybe in their head they weren't going to be as good, and we beat them before. We weren't ready to defend the way we're capable of defending. Our pressure didn't have an impact. We weren't able to increase the pace of the game. You know, we keep a statistic, you know, coaches big on deflections.
Yes.
Per game and how many deflections we get. And the first half of that game was the least number of deflections he said he had ever seen in a game. Like, and that goes to just our activity and our intensity and, you know, the compete level that we're playing with. So, I just think it comes down to that pretty simply. Like, if we're ready to guard, we may not win every game, but we'll have a chance to win every game. If we're not ready to guard, you know, we're probably going to get beat. We gave up 14 threes against Hofstra, and quite honestly, they are a good team who shoots the ball well. But to give up 14 threes you know, especially after we really controlled a very good offensive team in 10, you know, in our opener, that was really a bad sign for our defense, and hopefully just a day where we weren't, you know, we weren't completely ready to play on that end, and one that won't happen again.
Right. So two quick questions. We'll try to squeeze them in. Number one, seems like you're having a problem the last two games. Lezinski's hurt. You got some guys that are banged up, but the bench is not scoring any points. Any quick thoughts on that?
Yeah, our bench has to get better for sure. You know, we've got to get some guys comfortable. You know, they're all new, right? Pretty much.
I mean,
Cruz Davis is a freshman. All the guys are new. So we've got to get them in their comfort zone and get them out there in spots where they feel like they can help us. But we've got to improve. We need a better bench. And I think we have some guys that can get better there.
All right, cool. All right, Bob, good luck on Sunday after Thanksgiving against Santa Clara. That's going to be a tough game. They're a good team.
Yeah, it'll be Saturday night, actually.
Saturday
night late in Vegas.
Oh, so, that's right.
I appreciate it, Coach. Thanks.
All right, thank you so much. Thanks for coming on the show, Bob Walsh. We'll have you on again. Thank you. All right, folks, we'll go to the commercial break, and we'll be back for the second half of the show.
We love that basketball.
3-2.
They're playing basketball.
Okay, folks, we are back on College Hoops Chat on WVOX 1460 AM. I'm Jim Misano, your host. We're here every Monday night from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock. Thank you for tuning in and being part of our show. Kenny from Rye, our number one caller, is on the line. Kenny, how are you?
James, how are we doing?
Doing very good. Well, that was great to interview our former Little League. Kenny, you coached on that team, too, of Bob Walsh.
Exactly, the championship team, and remember it well.
Our pitcher was Joey Delgado, who was like we were friends with his sisters, remember?
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
So funny. It was a great team, and I still see some guys on that team from every now and then, and I have a lot of laughs chatting with them.
One of the teammates is the neighbor too here.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So funny. Anyway, it was a lot of fun. We coached the league, Kenny and I. We've loved sports for a long time. Kenny, let me clarify something that Bob Walsh just clarified. So the game against Santa Clara, which is listed on the schedules as a Sunday game, that's because it starts at midnight. I don't know if everybody realizes that. If you look at the schedule, all right, it has Sunday as the date of the game. But the game technically is Saturday night in Vegas at 9 o'clock, which is midnight here in New York.
Yes, I saw that.
Okay,
yep.
So everybody got that. Maybe I'm the only one that missed it, but it does say Sunday for the game, but it's at midnight. So if you want to watch Iona play, it's Saturday night at midnight going into Sunday. Santa Clara. Now, Santa Clara is a good team. As everyone knows on this show, I use KenPom a lot to analyze games because they rank all 363 college basketball teams every day. Right now they have Santa Clara ranked 100, Iona ranked 82, which means they're least analytically very close teams. They're playing on a neutral court in Las Vegas. Kenny, it should be a great game.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about the West Coast Conference 2 weeks ago, and at that point Santa Clara and KenPom was 111. Gonzaga obviously was the top. St. Mary's, as usual, is there. But it's a good division, and Santa Clara has gotten better and better each year, and I expect that to be a great game for them. That's a good out-of-conference game for Iona College and a great tournament in Las Vegas.
Right, so were you able to catch the Vermont game on Friday night, Iona and Vermont?
Yeah, I did. I thought they played extremely well. As you say, it was a tale of two teams over the course of those three games. You know, they looked great the first game out against Penn. You know, kind of a weak showing at Hofstra, as you said. They a little bit unsure of why they were flat, but they were flat. And then they came out firing against the University of Vermont. As we've mentioned, that's a solid team. So that's a good win for Iona College as well.
Vermont is a team that's on the cusp of winning their conference every year for like the last decade. That's a very strong program, very well coached program. People talk about their coach as a coach that might move up to another program. So Iona started the game. They opened a big lead. It was actually 37-28 at the half, but Iona did have a 15-point lead. Vermont made a run, then the Gales fought back in the closing minutes. What I noticed in the first half was how well Iona shot. They shot 55% from the field, and they got a lot of points off turnovers. Defense was really setting off the offense. They played off their defense. They were getting steals. They were getting fast breaks. They were getting open looks, which allowed them to go up 37-28 at the half. Then Iona continued just to roll in the second half. They ended up winning the game on Friday. The game was at Mohican Sun, neutral court. up in Connecticut. They won 71-50. I note that Iona led the entire game against the strong Vermont team. And by the way, they won without Quinn Slezinski, one of their best players, who played really well in the first two games. He's got an ankle injury. We heard about that. Bob thinks he'll get back soon, hopefully for the game against Santa Clara. But the other guy stepped up is the point. They lost one of their best players. Everybody else stepped up. Interesting stat, Ken. The starters scored 99% of Iona's points in the Vermont game on Friday night at Mohican Sun. So the bench is limited. Got 1 point. But Barrick John Louis played terrific with 23 points. Quinn Jenkins, again, a strong performance, 20 points. Walter Clayton stepped up with 14. They got 23 points on turnovers. Again, good defense all game against Vermont. Shut them down, and Iona's offense exploded.
Yeah, it seems like they're a little bit streaky on the shooting side. And as I say, maybe it is off the back of the better they defend, the better they shoot. But I did notice, and in particular the first game, once they got warmed up, when they came out with 4 out of the 5 starters as returning players, they started off on a good note and shot well against Penn. And then, you know, Hofstra went a little cold, and then vice versa on Vermont there. So, and maybe offense is dictated by their defense.
It is. And we saw that also against Penn. The defense was really, really strong after Rick put on the press, and then the offense exploded against Penn. So we've now seen it twice happen, the defense leading to offense with Iona. By the way, that's no mystery. That's what Rick has been doing his whole life. He did it with Providence. He did it with Kentucky. He did it with Louisville. So we've seen Rick Pitino have very strong defensive teams that spark the offense. So, all right. Kenny, Friday night, did you watch any other games? I watched 3 games. I watched Iona's game. I watched Indiana Xavier. And I watched Illinois-UCLA. You catch any of those games?
I caught a little bit of the Illinois-UCLA, just on the back of, we've talked about them the last couple of years, and we've been kind of wrong as they had that run 2 years ago. And we thought last year they'd come back with so many returning players, they'd be a strong team. They didn't kind of live up to their billing as we thought. They'd walk to the Final Four. And again, this year, coming back with 2 very mature players who are, you know, potential, you know, first-team All-Americans. And they got off to, you know, they've got off to it, not the greatest start as well. And I guess, you know, our favorite there, John Rothstein, said their defense does not look like a Nick Cronin's defense. So I'm not sure what their problem is, but I will say Illinois has been a surprise due to the fact is that I had no idea that they had lost 10 out of 13 players, but that was made clear in the beginning of that game.
So that's pretty unbelievable, right? They lost 10 out of 13 guys. They brought a bunch of transfers in, including Terrence Shannon, who played like a lottery pick. It was ridiculous how strong he was for Illinois. He was at Texas Tech. But I was really impressed, right? It's got to be hard when you have a team of freshmen and transfers, mostly, to get them to play good D, and Illinois' defense was locked down and shut down UCLA in that game. It was really impressive. Brad Underwood is known as a great defensive coach. Illinois looked really good.
Yeah, I mean, they've turned themselves into a premier Big Ten program the last 2 years. I mean, Rothstein loved them all last year, and that was probably half the reason why I followed them and watched them. They had some great players last year, expected to do very well, had a good season overall. Big Ten, a little bit of a disappointment in the tournament. But again, coming back, you don't expect a team that has to bring in 10 new players to be, you know, at the top of the league right away. But as you say, they surely looked at like that the other night.
They did. And UCLA, I don't know what's going on there, right? They started with 3 kind of cupcake games. They won them all pretty big. And then they lost to Illinois on Friday, and that was 79-70, a game they were favored in. And then yesterday they played Baylor. I missed the game, but Baylor beat them 80-75. Looks like it was a good game. I read about the game. But they have lost 2 in a row. I mean, look, give UCLA credit. They didn't play all cream puffs. They took on Illinois and Baylor in their non-conference schedule, but they lost both games. So I don't know quite yet what's going on with the UCLA Bruins.
Yeah, it makes no sense considering who they're returning. And also we know how they recruit out there in the West Coast. So it's not like a lack of talent on the freshman class.
Mick Cronin is a great coach. The Pac-12, I'm not quite sure how deep they are with good teams. UCLA will be really strong. They'll be a leader in the Pac-12, and they'll be in the NCAA tournament. I'm still pretty sure of that.
Yeah, I would expect them to be there. I mean, from a perspective of, and we've talked about this before, you know, does the hard schedule help you out in the long term? particularly with a mature team like that, you're confident in what you're doing in scheduling hard teams and kind of waking them up, getting them motivated, getting them ready, knowing that you're going to get to the number to get you into the tournament. So, you know, for a team like UCLA, I'm going to put my money down on them again, and I think they're going to have a good year.
So I watched also on Friday night Indiana-Xavier. Indiana won 81-79. It was a really good game. I think both of these are tournament teams, having watched them play. Xavier is back to being a very gritty, tough, hard-nosed, strong team under Sean Miller, who's now their coach again. And it was an interesting game. Indiana won 81-79, so it was close. Trayce Jackson-Davis is really a superstar for Indiana. He scored 30 points. Xavier Johnson at 23. But I also was impressed with Xavier. They went toe-to-toe with Indiana. They're going to be a team towards the top of the Big East, Ken, Xavier.
Yeah, I would expect from the class that he brought in, even as late as it was, that you know, bringing Miller back to the Big East was kind of a coup for them from a coaching standpoint. I mean, you know, he left for quote-unquote greener pastures, the bigger school, thinking that that would be an easier road to the Final Four or championship possibly. So bringing them back, or bringing him back in particular, is a huge boost for Xavier. And obviously was shown by who we brought in very quickly. So I would expect them to be a force now and going forward as well. And I think this time Miller out for a while.
He walks in, Sean Miller, not to a struggling team, a team that won the NIT, played extremely well in the NIT, and now they have Fremantle and Nunji, like two really strong big men, and Colby Jones. Xavier's really good.
Yep, I expect a good year out of Xavier, as I would do for the top of the Big East.
All right, Kenny Garay, thank you so much for the call. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Ken.
Thank you. All right, folks, we're going to our last commercial break. Okay, folks, we are back on College Hoops Chat, and we have our next guest, who is a friend of mine from Twitter, who I've talked college basketball with on Twitter, Steve Heigl. Did I say it right, Steve?
It's Heigl.
Heigl, yeah, Steve Heigl. How are you, Steve?
Good, how are you?
Great, so tell us about yourself. I know you're involved in covering college basketball and college football, and you're in the Washington, D.C., Baltimore area. Tell us about yourself.
Yeah, trying to cover college basketball and college football at a national level. You can find me on Twitter at Steve Heigl, Steve Heigel, a couple different websites. I'm a big-time fan. I love to go to games and see games live. I've been to a couple games so far this year, and I have a lot more trips planned to go to see a lot of good teams live and in person.
That's great. So you're in the Baltimore, Washington area, so you can go to like a Maryland game, a Towson's game, maybe a Georgetown game if you want to see Georgetown. You got a couple of nice venues there for you.
Yeah, I just recently went to the Veterans Classic, the doubleheader where I saw Houston play. I think they look like the best team in the country to me so far. They played in the first game of the doubleheader, beat St. Joe's. I'm going to see Towson tomorrow night, and I'm planning on going to see Maryland next Friday the 2nd when they play Illinois. It looks like a really good team thus far this season.
I saw Illinois beat UCLA on Friday. We already talked about it on the show, and I was really impressed how quickly Brad Underwood got that team to a very high level, particularly on defense, where they were one of the best defensive teams I've seen, Steve.
I agree, and the best thing about that Illinois team was the fact that he's gotten a lot of transfers in this year. He lost Kofi Coburn, lost a point guard as well, and to St. John's. And it's amazing how good they are with a lot of new players and transfers. It's not many holdover players from last year.
I agree. I was impressed. All right, so let's talk about a team. I'm going to just throw out a team at you since you know college basketball. So I've now seen Kentucky play twice. They had kind of three easier games early on. They played two easy games, then they lost to Michigan State, then they had another easy game, and then they lost to Gonzaga. So they challenged themselves. I give them credit, Kentucky, but they lost both times. They challenged themselves, and they got beat pretty badly, right? They got beat by Michigan State 86-77 on a neutral court. And Gonzaga really creamed them yesterday, 88-72. I thought Gonzaga played very well, but I'll tell you something. Kentucky's a little overrated right now, at least from what I've seen.
Yeah, I agree. I think you got to give them some time. I think once the SEC schedule comes into play in January, maybe probably late December, early January, they'll be rounding into form more. But it's not been seamless for Cal with the transfers that have come in, even with the players that have come back in the freshmen. I think you still got to give them some time, but right now they don't look that great. They honestly don't.
They really don't. So, but you're right. I mean, this is a team that's got two five-star freshmen they're trying to work into the rotation, and they'll be much better in the SEC part of their schedule, you're right. But right now, they're not a top team from what I've seen. All right, let's talk about a team you already brought up, because I don't think we've talked about them yet on the show, which is a mistake, because I, too, agree the best team in America I've seen so far are the Houston Cougars. Tell me what you think of them.
Yeah, very impressive. I saw them in person play the Veterans Classic in the first game against St. Joseph's. They ran them off the court. I think the most impressive thing was not only the talent level for Houston is diving for loose balls 2 seconds into the game. I mean, the hustle from that team. They have a solid bench. Several players came off the bench and contributed. The freshman, Walker, is probably their best player, in my opinion, even better than Sasser and Tremont Mark. I think he's probably their best player. He was a big-time recruit that came in there. And the fact that Houston now can get a player like that nationally over the likes of, you know, Villanova, St. John's, or Maryland, or Duke of North Carolina is very impressive. And, of course, the number one thing is they get to the Final Four. Those games are right in their backyard in Houston at the NRG Stadium. So it's going to be a very big home court advantage for them if they can get that far.
So Houston is 5-0. Their first four games, outside of Oral Roberts, no big challenges. But for their fifth win, they beat a very strong Oregon team. Oregon's a team that will compete for the Pac-12 title. And they beat them 66-56 yesterday. Houston does now have a nice strong win on their resume.
And it was a road game as well. It was at Oregon's court, so that was an impressive win. They play Virginia at Virginia. I believe it's the 17th of December. It's going to be a really big game. Now you see what Virginia's done the last couple days out in Las Vegas, so that'll be very interesting to see how they match up. I believe the game is at Virginia. I don't think it's a neutral court game. I believe it's at Virginia. And they also play Alabama, I believe, the second week of December, and that game, I believe, is a neutral court game.
Right, so they got three big challenges coming up, folks. You should really put that on your schedule. So let's go to Steve's recommendations, but I'm going to add one, Steve. Saturday, December 3rd, on a semi-home court, they're calling it, they're playing St. Mary's, who's an excellent team.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yes, you're correct. Yeah,
right.
They do play St. Mary's as well. And that's good for Houston to play these high-quality opponents, because the AAC is not the best conference. I mean, it's solid, but they're not going to get tested on a nightly basis in that conference. I mean, they could run the table in that conference, to be honest with you.
Right,
and
they could.
We'll find out. But it's going to be good for them. It's kind of like they're almost like another Gonzaga, where they're going to play a weaker conference. Now, of course, the WCC has got much better, but weaker conference opponents, it's better to play a lot of tough games at the beginning, because you're not going to get tested almost every night during the conference season like you would if you were in the Big Ten or the Big East or one of the other Power Five conferences.
Absolutely. So let's do these other two games that you've mentioned. December 10th, at home against Alabama. Alabama's number 13 in the nation on KenPom. That's a strong team. And then probably their biggest challenge is number 5 in the nation, literally also one of the best teams I've seen this year, December 17th away at Virginia. That'll be their toughest game.
Yeah, that'll be a very tough game. Virginia's impressed me. I thought they would be good this year, but I didn't think they'd be good as they are. I saw them play the other night, and I was really impressed. I didn't think, like I said, they would be that good. And it'll be a very interesting three or four games, whatever they play, North Carolina and Duke in the ACC. The ACC looks again like it's really top heavy. I don't know about the middle and the bottom tiers, but we'll find out in the next couple months.
I agree. And you know what's interesting about the Houston-Virginia matchup? They are both extremely well-coached teams where the coach just doesn't get the best player available. Both coaches concentrate on getting players, both recruiting, whether it's transfer or a freshman, who play their style. Both coaches are looking for unique players that'll fit into their system, and it really works, Steve.
That's very true, and I think that's what you have to do in going forward. I think you can't rely exclusively on recruiting high school players, and you also can't rely exclusively on the transfer portal. I think you got to mix and match and try to find the best players that fit your system. Another team that's always done that for years is Villanova. Now that Jay Wright's retired, we'll see how it goes forward with Kyle Neptune, but that's what Villanova's always done as well.
All right, so I believe I've seen you talk about going to Towson games. Dick Towson is one of the best teams in a pretty good conference, the Colonial Conference. Is that true?
Yeah, I think Towson's got a really, really good chance to win that conference this year. The conference has gotten a lot better, as you've seen. I mean, College of Charleston challenged North Carolina the first week of the season. There are a few other teams. UNC Wilmington put up a stiff test. I can't remember who they played.
North Carolina. They gave them a first half, tough game.
They played somebody else tough, too, though. But, yeah, the conference is really good, and they've added a few teams. They lost James Madison to the Sun Belt, but they have had a few teams like Monmouth and Stony Brook to the conference. It's going to be a great conference night in and night out this season. There's going to be a lot of tough games for Towson and the other top teams as well.
I agree. I think that's a conference that's absolutely moving up. I have a house in North Carolina in Wilmington, so I've kind of adopted them as one of the teams I keep an eye on. And another team, well coached, they play hard, they play to the coach's system, and they'll be a good team in the Colonial.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, UNC Wilmington, they had a nosedive a couple years ago, and then they let go of their coach, and ever since they did, they've been right back on track and right at the top of that conference in the last couple of seasons, and they'll be there again this season.
All right, so here's a team that I think is going to take steps forward this year, and I think over the next two or three years, there'll be a team to reckon with. I'm a big fan of Kevin Willett. I think he's going to do a great job at Maryland.
Yeah, he already has so far. I mean, it's impressive what they've done. I mean, a lot of people weren't giving him any hope for this season and all, just banking on the next few seasons once he got his own recruits in. But yeah, they've looked very impressive in the last couple weeks of the season and how well they've played. Now, of course, they got a couple of tests coming up more. They have played home against Illinois next week, and then they play UCLA at home as well in a couple weeks. I'm not, off the top of my head, I'm not sure who they play in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. Maybe Louisville?
So they do have, let me go through this. They do have a Louisville game on November 29th.
Yeah, that's the Big Ten Challenge ACC game, which Louisville's not very good this year, so it wouldn't be the biggest challenge for Maryland. But they still do, like I said, play UCLA at home and Illinois to start the Big Ten season. That Big Ten conference every season is just it's like a fist fight every game.
Right.
it's like a boxing match. It's so tough night in and night out. You know, if you come out at the end of that season in the top four or five in the conference, you've got a good tough team. So
I agree.
We'll see how they do once conference play starts, because it's brutal every.
Hey, Maryland just beat St. Louis and Miami, Florida. Those are two big wins already.
True. They're a very impressive win.
Steve, you did a fabulous job. We're so happy to have you on the show. We're going to have you back, and let's keep talking on Twitter and enjoy this college basketball season.
Absolutely. You too. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve. Great chatting. All right, folks, I hope you enjoyed the show. We covered a lot of different parts of college basketball tonight. I had fun being here. We'll be back next Monday. Enjoy the games this week, folks. See you next Monday. I'm Jim Massano. Bye-bye.